This is Scott Becker with Becker's Healthcare. This is a special edition of a discussion of ambulatory surgery centers in 10 to 15 key points about the surgery center industry. This podcast will last about 25 to 30 minutes, and we'll go through about 10 to 15 key points on the industry. So the first overriding advice we have for people in the surgery center business, and this is not unique to surgery centers, is three core concepts. Is have a plan for your business, stay closely engaged in your business, and hire and retain great people for your business. So those three points that are overriding business points, we'll come back to a couple times in this presentation. On to the surgery center business. In the surgery center business, there are currently, as of 2019, 5,600 Medicare certified surgery centers. This is sort of a fascinating stat for a couple reasons. One, in the last 10 years, up to the last year or so, there had been almost no growth in the total number of Medicare certified surgery centers. This is largely because a lot of physicians that were one-time independent already owned a surgery center or became employed by health systems, thus they weren't able to invest in or do another surgery center. So a great deal of the surgeon universe was already spoken for in terms of surgery centers. Now, notwithstanding the fact that there's been almost no growth the last 5 to 10 years, the last 2 years, there's been a return to growth. So in 2017, MedPAC and Medicare reports that the number of surgery centers grew by 200 and about 61 surgery centers closed. So after years of almost the same amount of centers opening as closing, about 100 would open a year, about 100 would close a year. In 2017, about 200 opened and 61 closed. And then 2018 saw similar growth numbers. The growth is coming from three or four different places. One, it's hospital systems that are looking to expand into outpatient surgery for a whole bunch of reasons into joint venture surgery centers. Some of that's hospital expansion in states that were traditionally certificate of need states, and now that it's become a little bit easier for those hospitals to build surgery centers, often with physician partners. Second is private equity-driven companies that are investing in surgery centers, and that comes in two different parts. One, you have funds like KKR that invested in Covenant Surgical Partners with the intent of having growth in the amount of surgery centers in that company. And that's similar with investments by private equity funds in other surgery center companies as well. The flip side to that is private equity funds that are investing in surgical practices, GI practices or procedural driven practices, gastroenterology practices, orthopedic practices, ophthalmology practices, and then those practice management platforms looking to build surgery centers. The third place of growth outside of private equity and hospital-driven is still some growth of single specialty surgery centers. And again, we'll talk in a moment about the most prevalent specialties. In most specialties that are most prevalent for surgery centers have already been built. At the same time, there still are a certain number of practices that didn't earlier have interest in building a surgery center that are building them today. So sort of four points to start with that we've started with so far. 5,600 Medicare certified surgery centers, very little growth over the last 10 years, but an uptick in growth in the last year to two, with about 100 to 140 net surgery centers being added per year. That growth is coming from private equity funded surgery centers and practice management platforms, as well as hospitals, and some amount of that growth comes from simply single specialty and small surgery centers. So those are sort of the starting few points for our discussion. The next point I'll talk about is key specialties for surgery centers. When you look at surgery centers, the four main types of procedures done in surgery centers are gastroenterology, ophthalmology, pain management, and orthopedics. So of those four specialties, cataracts and colonoscopies drive the biggest number of procedures, followed by epidurals and pain management procedures. Orthopedics are also critical to surgery centers, not as high volume as GI, ophthalmology, and pain management, but higher reimbursement per procedure. Thus, you end up with a substantial amount of orthopedics in surgery centers as well. The next category of specialties that are important for surgery centers, general surgery, ENT, and spine. Again, general surgery in all kinds of different places, ENT often in pediatric-driven surgery centers, ear tubes, and so forth, and then spine, a growing specialty for surgery centers. In terms of the core specialties, we've talked about those, and then I'll give you MedCats, MedPAC's perspective on those. MedPAC's makes suggestions to CMS as to reimbursement for surgery centers. So your thoughts are very, very important. The core MedPAC philosophy is the lowest price possible to pay surgery centers, but to get cases to migrate from higher expense settings to lower expense settings. So in surgery centers, the prices paid for gastroenterology and ophthalmology seem to be sufficient to move cases from hospitals to surgery centers. In orthopedics for Medicare, it's often the case that orthopedic-driven surgery centers still don't want to do Medicare cases at their surgery centers because reimbursement is not high enough. A second thought on where MedPAC has set prices and where CMS has set prices, a surgery center on average gets paid net about 50% what a hospital outpatient department gets paid for the same procedure. So a colonoscopy in a hospital might get paid $900. In a surgery center, it might get paid $430 to $450. Similar with cataracts and arthroscopies and other procedures. Typically, the surgery center gets paid literally about half of what a hospital outpatient department gets paid for the same procedure. The next concept that MedPAC has set forth is really a couple concepts. One is skepticism and concern over the amount of pain management moving to surgery centers, and more concern that surgery centers should have to provide cost data to MedPAC so MedPAC could better decide whether they can drive prices lower because surgery centers are making enough profits after their cost in surgery centers. The other thing that MedPAC has pushed for is less inflationary increases in what surgery centers are paid to try and reduce the amount of total payments made to surgery centers per procedure. So four or five thoughts for MedPAC. They're looking for the lowest possible price to still move cases from hospitals to surgery centers. Surgery centers get paid about 50% of what hospitals get paid for the same procedure. MedPAC's skeptical of the number of pain procedures being done in surgery centers. MedPAC would like to reduce or limit inflationary increases for surgery centers, and MedPAC would also like to collect more cost data from surgery centers with the intent of better understanding the profitability of surgery centers and probably trying to drive down the amount that they're paying to, that CMS is paying to surgery centers. The next point we'll talk about is growth, not just growth in total numbers of surgery centers, but growth in what types of procedures. We're currently seeing growth in total joints in surgery centers. There's probably 300 to 400 surgery centers in the country that do total joints, total knees or total hips in surgery centers. That is growing relatively rapidly. We're seeing a growth in vascular access procedures and some of the cardio-related procedures. You're seeing growth in spine. And then probably most important, and the biggest important part of growth, continues to be the sort of the organic growth of practices adding on to their core practices. So this might be a GI practice, an ophthalmology practice, a pain management practice, or an orthopedic practice adding surgeons onto their own practice. Surgeons are proceduralists, and this leading to growth in surgery centers. You do see tremendous growth in total of movement of cases from inpatient to outpatient still, and then there's a great divide. It's where those outpatient cases are moving to surgery centers or moving to other hospital settings or even to practice settings. So not all the growth and transition is moving from inpatient to outpatient to surgery centers, but inpatient to outpatient to surgery centers, to hospital outpatient departments, to practice offices, and a number of other settings. So it mutes some of the growth that you see in surgery center growth, even though there continues to be expansion in outpatient procedures. The next topic we'll talk about as it relates to surgery center is healthcare reform. In terms of healthcare reform, there tends to be three major schools of thought out there or camps. There's sort of the Medicare for All camp, there's the public option camp, and there's the free market camp. In terms of those three sort of potential options, I'll start with a quick discussion of the free market camp. Things are never quite going to be truly quote unquote a free market because even now, 30, 40, 50% of most provider revenues comes from Medicare or Medicaid. And that number, no matter what happens with the government, will continue to expand as the population ages. So no matter what, we're sort of already out of what one could consider quote unquote a true free market. So you look more at options like keeping things sort of as they are, versus a public option versus Medicare for All. From a Medicare for All perspective, the big downside from a provider's perspective is simply that of reimbursement. From a provider perspective, physician, hospital, or surgery center, most providers believe they don't get paid well enough under Medicare to have them thrive or keep the margins they need to keep. In contrast, commercial payers subsidize what Medicare pays and allow surgery centers, hospitals, physicians to make incomes that are satisfactory to them. And so generally, as I talk to providers, CEOs of health systems, owners of surgery centers, physician practices, almost everybody is universally aligned with the concept of wanting people to have better access to care and better quality care. I think the greater concern is how that's paid for. So that's sort of the Medicare for All, which, again, laudatory goals and some challenges. In contrast, free market is sort of a misnomer because we never truly have a free market, because even now, Medicare, Medicaid, in many specialties, take ophthalmology, might be responsible for 80% of pay, with cataracts and so forth, gastroenterology more like 30, 40%, but it's never really a true free market. It's somewhere in between. There are two things that the general public seems to generally agree upon, whether right or left. One, the general public, most polls show, is very much in favor of the concept of you can't stop someone from getting insurance because they have a pre-existing condition. So the concept being no one wants to be barred from getting insurance because of some pre-existing condition, and everybody is a family member or knows somebody that's got a horrible pre-existing condition that otherwise would make it very difficult for them to get coverage. So most people want this concept of being able to get coverage regardless of pre-existing conditions. The second thing that we find people are increasingly enthused about is some sort of middle option, some sort of public option. And I think this grows out of, as much as anything, whether you're rich or poor, whatever color, whatever ethnicity you are, concerned that if you only have one insurance option or you have to go to the market to get insurance and you're not employed by a major employer, that your insurance can be crazily expensive. So most people polled like the concept of a public option, and of course, it will depend on what pricing looks like, but think of the public option as like the post office versus UPS or Federal Express. It just gives you a different alternative. It doesn't mean you have to buy your coverage through Medicare, but it gives you a different alternative. Those concepts, pre-existing conditions and a public option, seem to have great national support, and at some point, one would hope that Republicans and Democrats would find some middle ground on healthcare reform to solve what are very real problems for individuals, consumers, and so forth, as well as the provider universe. In terms of a quick couple comments on Obamacare, whether you agree with it or not, what it largely ended up being was a Medicaid expansion program that was not the original alternative, but of the 25 million or so additional people covered through Obamacare, through the ACA, 20 of those 25, or something close to that, were covered through expansion of Medicaid programs. So at the end of the day, moved cost, moved who pays for things, helped people get coverage that were relatively low income, and that's very important, but a lot of that shift will turn to cost shift to the states over the next several years. So at the end of the day, we don't have a crystal ball on healthcare reform. We do know that Medicare for All, while it has some populist approach, is not that loved by providers on average, at least what I hear anecdotally. And at the same time, saying that we'll just be a free market is also not really quite accurate, because we're already quite past that. In terms of coming back to surgery centers again, surgery centers at the end of the day, their revenues are highly dependent upon two things: the number of procedures that they're doing, and the reimbursement per procedure. Surgery centers remain greatly reliant on ophthalmologists, gastroenterologists, orthopedic surgeons, pain management surgeons, and the rest of the surgeons that use surgery centers, and they're greatly reliant on them remaining at least partially independent. What's happened over the last decade, 80% or so of physicians that are primary care physicians have ended up employed by physicians, but only 30% or so of the procedural specialists have ended up employed. The surgical community has remained much more resilient to employment than probably expected. This has been a huge saving grace, of course, for surgery centers. That's the procedure side. On the reimbursement side, here is what's happened. Medicare reimbursement has stayed relatively solid, about the same as it was, small inflationary increases, but generally okay in certain specialties for surgery centers, to good for certain specialties, to bad for other specialties, but not great changes. On the commercial side, years ago, you heard of drastic cuts in commercial reimbursement. More recently, we don't see as much of that. More today, it's general fighting with payers, trying to continue to stay in the game with payers, but not huge drastic reductions. The flip side is, if you're an out-of-network center or you're heavily reliant on workers' comp, then you have much more risk of big reductions in reimbursement on the commercial side. One of the truisms of American healthcare is the payers generally continue to become more powerful versus less powerful. They continue to do quite well. So notwithstanding all the discussions of this kind of reform won't be fair to them, this will hurt them, this will harm them, whatever the lobbyists say, at the same time, it seems that over the last decade to two decades, payers have continued to do quite well. In terms of briefly key legal issues for surgery centers, the four or five issues that we see come up more often today in terms of serious legal risk, meaning governmental or false claims risk, are things related to the following. And we won't get into legal discussions issues today other than to point them out. First, physician-owned distributorships, more and more action here and more cases here. Second, pain management, just increased concern from the government over utilization of pain management procedures. It means that if you are a surgery center or are a physician practice, great documentation and great reality on medical necessity. You still see the government talking a decent amount in false claims cases around anesthesia. And again, like most things, there's probably very legitimate ways for surgery centers to provide pain management or anesthesia services, and then more challenging ways for them to do so. The fourth issue that continues to come up in surgery centers is this issue of selling physician shares at a discounted price to get their cases. Again, great concern here in a big case in the dialysis joint venture world around this issue of selling shares at below fair market value or at gimmicked valuation prices. Fifth is the concept of kicking people out of surgery centers in exchange for, because they're not doing cases. And again, continues to be an issue. So those sort of five issues, physician distributorships, pain management utilization, anesthesia profiting, selling shares at below fair market value, and kicking physicians out. Doesn't mean there's not legitimate reasons to kick physicians out or to redeem them, and there are a ton of them, but just different issues that come up depending on how that is utilized. The big chains in surgery centers is our next issue. The fascinating thing about the big chains in surgery centers is the crazy amount of transition over the last several years. AmSurge at one time was completely a surgery center company, making 90% of its revenues or so from outpatient surgery and surgery centers. As its growth slowed in same-store sales for surgery centers, it totally transformed its company into a physician services company, merging with a couple other companies to become Envision Healthcare. Now, Envision is only 10-15% revenues from outpatient surgery, and the rest of the business is physician practices. Another little large change, one of the great chains, is SCA. SCA, again, a great growth story in physician joint ventures, hospital joint ventures, and then a few years ago sold itself ultimately to Optum, which is part of United, and basically opened up a whole nother level of different types of growth opportunities for SCA. The third big chain we'll talk about for a moment is USPI. USPI, another great surgery center chain, ultimately sold itself to Tenet, not necessarily due to lack of growth or lack of challenges or problems. In fact, its growth is up again, but probably due to its capital being ready to make a move. And so it sold to Tenet. The fast thing from an individual surgery center perspective is whenever the biggest chains in the business are making big macro changes, it's always kind of concerning from an individual surgery center position as to what does that look like for you in the long run. Other companies, HCA is also one of the biggest holders of surgery centers. Most of those surgery centers are in markets where HCA has great hospital systems and does well. Again, core hospital chain with a big surgery center, outpatient surgery center business and division. The future of surgery centers is clearly the future is outpatient. There's more and more cases moving towards outpatient surgery. The great question is, do they end up in surgery centers with physician owners or not? The other great challenge in the long run is the physician community. Whether the physician community that uses surgery centers stays relatively independent or ends up, as the younger generation becomes more employee-centric towards hospitals and health systems, which should also have a dent on the surgery center business. Again, we'll go back to, as we finish up here, three or four core points. First core point is you have some sort of plan. Every surgery center, every year or so, should take a serious look at, do we stay the course, or do we do some sort of transaction, some kind of sale, some kind of other effort? So it's what's the core plan? And taking a look almost every year, do we stay the course, do something new? The second concept is to stay engaged. You see this in all businesses. We see it in surgery centers where the key leaders and drivers, administrators, have to stay excited. You have to stay on top of it. You have to stay at it. At some point, if they're not doing so, they take their eye off the prize. Things start to go in the wrong direction. Third concept is as important as anything, is almost in any business, having and retaining great people allows you as a surgeon and you as an owner and you as a facility to do things you need to do. If you have great people, making sure the store is running well, that the train's running on time, that it's running at the quality you want it to do, then it frees up people to do strategic planning, think about the plan, and operate well and do great business. Again, a great pleasure today to get a chance to talk about 10 to 15 issues related to surgery centers. We've covered the gamut of things. We're always open for other discussions and always looking for great podcast guests and speaker guests at the Becker's Healthcare Conferences. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you.